Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. The Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 20th day of May, 2000... May. I keep saying May. It is not May. March. I keep getting emails from every time I say the wrong month. March. March 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. I could easily start this program over and you would never know I screwed up. But that's just not how we roll here. As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for sharing it and spreading the word. It is because of you that anybody listens to this show. I have no idea how you even found out in the first place, but I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you're blabbing. I got an email from somebody who told me that they told their ex-husband about it, turned their ex-husband onto the show. So I don't know if that's out of spite or because they still like their ex-husband. Who knows? But I appreciate all of you listening, and we have a lot of stuff to get to. You can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and I will do my best to respond in a timely manner, which I'm getting really bad at, to be perfectly honest with you. It's just been a particularly busy time, and I apologize. I'll try to get to them. I get to them when I can. I really do. There's a lot to get to. At the end of the program, I'm going to put on my feeling like an old man, get off my lawn pants, and talk about the new lineup, or the lineup that was just announced for the 50th anniversary concert at Woodstock. You couldn't pay me to go to that thing. But we've got Beto and Poop Talk to get to, and they're in the same story, so you've got to stick around for that as well. Plus, Kirsten Gillibrand wants to insert the government into your relationship with your doctor. I thought that was bad, but she thinks that she can get some votes out of it and milk it. So she's going to try for it anyway. And a lot of other things, including a sort of a fringy candidate on the Democratic side who is getting some press and getting some traction and has apparently gotten enough donors to make it into at least the first debate in June. Can you believe the Democrats are going to start debating in June of the year before? God help us all. But I want to start off today with a discussion about the Electoral College. The Democratic Party's primary is an absolute lunatic off. They are going crazy. It's a break fight, except it's with crazy. You just have the first person to soil themselves and smear it all over their faces will not only get a National Endowment for the Arts grant, they'll probably win the nomination. Actually, if that were the case, Beto would probably win. Wait till you hear that story. But there is nothing that one of the candidates can do that another one of the candidates or many of the other candidates will then immediately follow behind on. Reparations, check, check, check. They all go down the line. It wasn't that long ago, a couple of years ago, actually a couple of weeks ago, when the Democratic Party agreed that the idea of reparations was insane and stupid and unmanageable. Now they're all getting on board because they want to buy votes. And it's really easy. I would live exceedingly well off of your money. I really would. If I had unfettered access to your money, not just your money in your bank accounts, but your credit cards. If I could take out a line of credit on your credit. If I could take out a second mortgage on your mortgage. I would live really, really well. I think I would exceed at spending other people's money. I'm pretty sure I'd be pretty good at that. Probably one of the best in the world, at least the country. And that's what the Democratic Party is doing. They are promising everybody the sun, the moon, and the stars on somebody else's money. It's not their money. And when it all goes to hell and it completely falls apart, they're not going to be held personally responsible. This is the way the Democratic Party works. They set up these gigantic government programs, these gigantic government agencies. We'll just use the Department of Education for an example, since we talked about education the other day. They set up the Department of Education to make education better for everybody in the country. They care so much about the children. Oh, how can you oppose education for the children? Nobody opposes education for the children. We just like to see results that actually matter. And ever since the Department of Education, this gigantic agency that grows constantly, it's much bigger than it was in the late 70s when Jimmy Carter started it. It grows and grows and grows, and the results that we get out of the education system have gotten worse and worse and worse. Well, Jimmy Carter is long since gone from the White House. All of the senators who voted for it, with the exception of Joe Biden, since he was there in 1973, are long since gone and forgotten. They aren't around to deal with the consequences of their massive program's failures. You name the program, they are set up to succeed for a while, and then they inevitably collapse. Social Security and Medicare have yet to collapse, but they're getting pretty damn close. The Ponzi scheme that is Social Security, we had something like 20 people working for every person over 65, every retiree on Social Security when Social Security started. We're fast approaching 2-to-1. 2-to-1. And it's only going to get worse. So if you're counting on Social Security, you're screwed. Just put it plainly. Medicare, it was somewhat affordable, at least the cost projections were, when it was passed, and now it has $100 trillion unfunded liability. Going forward, it is consuming ever more of our money, ever more of our federal budget. And the people who voted for it, the people who instituted it, and all the promises that they made at the time, it's collapsed. Here's a little statistic that I learned when I was doing health policy at the Heritage Foundation. 1965, Medicare, Congressional Budget Office. I don't think it was called the Congressional Budget Office at the time, but the official government estimates for the cost of Medicare by 30 years. They did 30-year projections of what they said that Medicare would cost. It cost what the government said, what the government told people at the time, it cost in 5 years what they said it would cost in 30 years. It cost in 5 years what people said it would cost in 30 years. Let that sink in. So whenever you hear a government cost projection, know that you need to hide your wallet buried in the backyard or whatever. So as you recognize, anything that's set up now, is Obamacare. It's causing premiums to skyrocket to this day. Still wreaking havoc, thanks John McCain, with all the problems that it caused. The problem with Obamacare for Obama, for Democrats, and why they lost the House and the Senate over it was because the consequences, the bad consequences, happened too quickly. Obamacare was never designed to be the end result. It was never designed to be the finish line. It was designed to be the starting line. Well, the latest starting line. They want complete government takeover of healthcare. Democrats do. It's just how it is. To get there, the American people are not going to give up what they currently have. The vast majority of the American people have private health insurance, and the vast majority of the American people who have private health insurance like it quite a bit. They don't want to give it up, and they would have to be forced to give it up if the government took over all of healthcare and gave a single-payer socialized medicine healthcare system. So Obamacare was designed to ruin the private insurance market, to facilitate its collapse, to speed up that collapse. But it happened too quickly. The costs rose too quickly. The design of Obamacare was so incompetent that what they'd hoped would collapse in 10 to 20 years started to cause massive problems and cost a fortune within the first couple of years. So Democrats were thrown out of office. Republicans came in. Thank God we got rid of the individual mandate and restored a little bit of freedom. The government can no longer force you to purchase a private product from a company. But the point of it was to collapse the private companies, to make it so expensive for those companies to operate that the people clamored for the government to come in. Government must do something. These insurance companies are ripping us off. If you remember HMOs, health maintenance organizations, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I'll be really quick. HMOs were created by Teddy Kennedy. And thanks to regulations, they became cost prohibitive. They became expensive. And to manage those costs, they began rationing. That was the way they were designed. Teddy Kennedy became the biggest critic of HMOs. He helped set them up because he wanted to ultimately destroy them and get government more control. Ultimately, it's incrementalism at its finest. So under Obamacare, if things had gone according to plan in 10 years when the system collapsed, there would be the government sitting there saying, well, we tried the private way. It didn't work. We now need single payer. Democrats screwed the pooch so bad on the design that it's collapsing early, and they've moved so far to the left, they no longer have the patience to wait for the market to be, well, that has been bastardized by the government, to collapse on its own. So now they're pushing ahead anyway. They push ahead on everything. Democrats are impatient people. They are Veruca Salt. They want their golden goose, and they want it now. The only thing is the American people still have a say. All of the American people, the entire country, still have a say in whether or not Democrats get their hands on the levers of power in Washington, D.C. And the American people have been keeping Democrats at bay, especially the new radical ones. And they're becoming very, very impatient, even though they've been in power for a very short time. That is why you're seeing this latest push by more and more Democrats, because these are the people that these candidates have to appeal to, are these radical, angry fascists who just can't wait to get the hands on government power so they can use it to punish their enemies. And make no mistake, they view you as an enemy, not an opponent, not as a fellow American, an enemy. Acquiesce or be destroyed. That is what they want. That is their mantra. So with that in mind, that is why we are seeing the latest push to essentially dismantle our system of government. It's not being framed that way, but there is no mistake about it. That is the end result of getting rid of the Electoral College, essentially either getting rid of the Senate or turning it into the senior version of the House of Representatives and packing the courts. More and more Democrats running for president are coming out in favor of these things, and more Democrats in Congress are also coming out in favor of these things. It's dangerous, dangerous, dangerous times, and I'm going to explain to you why. First, we'll talk about the Electoral College, because that is the one the candidates are going after today, and they've been going after on and off, not steadily, but on and off every once in a while since 2016. Democrats are very angry that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote but didn't win the presidency. It's not a surprise to them. That's how it works. It happened in 2000 with Al Gore and George W. Bush, and thank God it happened then. Thank God it happened in 2016. It happened before with John Quincy Adams in 1824. It happened again in 1876 with Rutherford B. Hayes. They relentlessly called him Rutherfraud for the way that he got in there, and he was a one-term president, so was John Quincy Adams. It happened in 1888 with Benjamin Harrison. It is not new. It is not unique. It is only now causing a stir because Democrats have lost the last two times that it happened. So before we get into why, let's listen to a two of the candidates, the most recent two, to go off about the Electoral College. First, we have Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas herself, trying to explain why the Constitution needs to be changed simply because a Democrat lost the presidential election.
Come a general election, presidential candidates don't come to places like Mississippi. Yeah. They also don't come to places like California and Massachusetts, right? Because we're not the battleground states. Well, my view is that every vote matters. And the way we can make that happen... is that we can have national voting, and that means get rid of the Electoral College and everybody counts.
Elizabeth Warren, allegedly a lawyer and a supposed constitutional lawyer, doesn't seem to understand the Constitution. Don't worry, I'll explain it to you in a second. But first, we go to another Democrat who was talking about this yesterday, Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke.
Getting rid of the Electoral College. Is that an idea that you would support?
I think there's a lot to that, because you had an election in 2016 where the loser got 3 million more votes than the victor. It puts some states out of play altogether. They don't feel like their votes really count. So if we really want every person to vote and give them every reason to vote, we got to make sure their votes count and go to the candidate of their choosing. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And it's something we talked about on the campaign trail in Texas in that last Senate race.
Whereas I said Elizabeth Warren understands the Constitution or should, Beto, I'm not really sure he understands the Constitution or why the Electoral College exists. But it doesn't matter. He's on board with Elizabeth Warren. He's on board with all of them. And the ones who have yet to come out in favor of getting rid of the Electoral College, and there aren't very many, will soon do just that because they cannot be out-wackoed by another one of their opponents. They have to be the craziest. It's kind of funny. All they really have to do is act sane, and they would stand a much better chance, but their base is so nuts that they have to go completely wacko in order to get the nomination. It's going to be fun to watch whoever wins this clown show over there twist themselves into a pretzel, trying to disavow most of what they had to promise to get the nomination in the first place. But why the Electoral College? Why does this thing exist? Is it because, as so many Democrats are saying, it's a vestige of slavery? That's probably my favorite thing. These lefties on MSNBC and CNN talking about how, you know, the Electoral College is just one of the vestiges of slavery that we must rid ourselves of. It has nothing to do with slavery. When this country was founded, we were not meant to be ruled by Washington, D.C., by a national capital. Don't send me emails. I know the original capital was New York, but it was until they could build Washington, D.C. It was meant to be a union of states. The states were to be the preeminent government in everybody's life. We were supposed to be 13 different states. The laws were free to vary wildly within those states. The federal government had very limited power, extremely limited power. If you read the Constitution, it lays out pretty much the things that the federal government is allowed to do. That's what the Constitution is. Here's what these institutions look like, and here's the powers that they are granted. They are not granted carte blanche. That is a progressive bastardization of the Constitution. When they took the preamble, the line, the general welfare, they said, oh, promote the general welfare. That means we can do just about anything. And you have to really ask yourself, why would the founding fathers then go on to meticulously design a very limited government if in the preamble they were going to say, all the stuff you're about to read is a whole bunch of BS. Go ahead, go crazy and do whatever you want. But there's no logic to the left. It's only a desire for power. So they don't ever address that disconnect. But the Electoral College was a reflection of the fact that the states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. In the ratification process of the Constitution, the big debate over the Constitution, every aspect of the Constitution was pretty much addressed in the Federalist Papers. Federalist 68, written by Alexander Hamilton, most likely. They were written anonymously. Publius is the one who is assigned this one, but it's widely believed that this is Alexander Hamilton. He wrote about why the Electoral College and the election of the executive. It's long. It's not super long. You could read it. I just want to read a couple of lines here that explains why the Electoral College, why not the direct election of a president. It writes, the process of election affords a moral certainty that the office of president will never fall to the lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications. Talent for low intrigue and the little arts of popularity may alone suffice to elevate a man to the first honors in a single state, but it will require other talents and a different kind of merit to establish him in the esteem and confidence of the whole Union, or of so considerable a portion of it that it would be necessary to make him a successful candidate for the distinguished office of the President of the United States. It's a very thesaurus thick kind of, they were so much smarter than us way back then. Basically, he's saying you cannot just appeal to New York or Virginia, the most populous states, or Pennsylvania. You have to have broad appeal. You want to appeal to then, of the 13 colonies, the vast majority of the 13 colonies. You can't just be the guy from Massachusetts if Massachusetts were the most populous state. Nobody from Rhode Island would ever be elected president. Nobody from Delaware would ever be elected president. They wanted to make it so that the power of the presidency was not concentrated in the most populous state. Some of those states had significantly more residents than several of the more rural states. So nobody from those rural states would ever stand a chance in hell of ever becoming president, not just in the immediate future after 1789, but in ever, honestly. So they designed a system in conjunction with the states. Remember, the states, some of them, it took a lot of convincing to get them to actually join the Union. They were all thought of, really, as their own individual countries. And until through the Civil War, really, if you ever visit a Civil War cemetery, they are listed on the gravestones, the dead, the people who died in the Civil War, are listed as being from the regiments of their various states. You would think that they were, you know, that Michigan was a country, that Pennsylvania was a country. That's what they were. Their first loyalty was, I'm a Virginian, or I'm a Pennsylvanian, or I'm a New Yorker. It was not to the United States. It wasn't until after the Civil War that they began to really look at themselves as one country rather than a country made up of the various states. And things have kind of gone downhill since then, actually. But the states matter. Now, extrapolating on Federalist 68 to the situation we have now with 50 states, you could conceivably become president of the United States by, the Democrats are going to win California. That's plain and simple. There is no doubt about that they will win New York as well. They conceivably could win those two states by a wide enough margin that it really doesn't matter what happens in the rest of the country. It really wouldn't matter that a Democrat would end up winning the popular vote because there are so many people in those states. Now, that means that the Midwest, the middle of the country, the breadbasket of the country, yeah, to hell with them. There's no point in campaigning or caring what anybody in Iowa thinks. Why bother? Iowa has so few people as to not matter. They're going to vote however they're going to vote. They can easily be canceled out by making sure that you get 5% more turnout in Los Angeles, for example. It's that dangerous, that concentrated out there. So that the center of the country, the part of the country that the left derisively refers to as flyover country, they suddenly don't matter. They don't matter. The Democrats want them not to matter. They despise that part of the country because they don't win in that part of the country. If you look at the electoral map of any election, really, that's broken down red and blue by county, you see the vast majority geographically of the country is red. The concentrations of blue are along the coasts. But there are a lot of people who live along the coasts. There's a lot of open space in the middle. Farmland, for example. Giant ranches. Those areas might as well not exist to the left. They don't elect Democrats, and the Democrats sort of hate them and resent them for not electing Democrats, the way they hate and resent anybody who doesn't elect Democrats. Their interests are just as important in a constitutional republic that we still sort of have, where the individual matters, where rights matter, where states' rights matter. The last vestiges of the concept that the states made the United States didn't create the states. This system disadvantages Democrats because they have to try and find a way to appeal to people they hold in contempt. And it's hard for them to hold them in contempt, to appeal to people they hold in contempt. It's hard to hide that contempt. But I can tell you for a fact, and it's common sense, that somebody living in Brooklyn, New York, has completely different interests and requirements and concerns from somebody who lives in Nebraska. Just night and day differences. Democrats want that person in Brooklyn to be able to dictate to the person in Nebraska how they must live. They essentially want to strip them of their relevance in electing the president, and they want to restrict them of their relevance in the United States Senate as well. I'm going to get to that in a second. That is why the Electoral College is so brilliant. You have to be able to appeal to the people who live in the Northeast and the people who live in the Midwest and the people who live in the Southwest and the South all across the country. There is no concentration. Democrats are whining, and you heard Elizabeth Warren. They only go to the battleground states. Well, those battleground states are all around the country. They represent various regions of the country. And believe it or not, it wasn't all that long ago, 1984, when Ronald Reagan won everything except Minnesota and the District of Columbia. So it is possible to flip states with a compelling candidate with a good vision and a great record. Democrats don't want that anymore. They're getting impatient. They demand everything now. They want to be able to run up the vote totals. If they spend all their time in California and New York, they can pretty much win the popular vote. The vast majority of the country geographically could vote against them, and that won't matter. So you can see why they want to get rid of the Electoral College. They don't want to have to appeal to people they hold in contempt. Yet we are still a union of states. We are not a country that tolerates little borders inside of it. The states still matter. And part of the way that they matter is in the United States Senate. The Constitution would be required to be changed to get rid of the Electoral College, even though Democrats have managed to convince 13 states to go with this popular vote thing, which is ridiculous. I don't know, Colorado was the most recent one, that if enough states to get a majority of the Electoral College agree to this scam, then, you know, the winner of the popular vote in the U.S. gets Colorado's electoral votes, not whoever wins the vote for president in Colorado. If it's different, tough. The government of Colorado just agreed to tell its own citizens to go chase themselves. Which is bizarre. I've never seen politicians line up to tell their constituents, I want to override your popular will if I so choose. And the liberals go, yeah, this is great, because they assume that they are always going to win these states. Some of them, maybe they will. Not other ones, they won't. But it's a bizarre situation where the elected politicians basically say, we want to override your will. They don't say it in that direct terms, but that's exactly what they're doing. So you have this situation with the Electoral College. It's never going to be repealed through a constitutional amendment. That's why the Supreme Court is so... Well, first, before we get to the Supreme Court, they're going to try to do this end run around. The United States Senate is never going to vote to amend the Constitution. You're not going to get two-thirds of the Senate to agree to that. So the Democrats have a plan for the Senate, too, because they want to destroy institutions they can't control. They want to destroy anything they can't control. And the situation for the United States Senate, if you just Google, what did I type in here? Senate is undemocratic. This has become a big fuss ever since Donald Trump won again. It's weird how when Democrats lose, they desperately scramble to try and change the rules to favor them. They want illegal aliens voting in local elections, and oopsie, there's some spillover into the federal elections. It's bound to happen. They want to get rid of the United States Senate. Who we have? Bloomberg. U.S. Senate is undemocratic. The case for abolishing the Senate. GQ. From the Washington Post. The Democratic Senate won't change anytime soon. From, let's see, Vox.com. The Senate is undemocratic and it matters. You go on and on. There's page after page of think piece by liberals explaining why the United States Senate should be abolished. The reason they want to abolish the United States Senate or change the United States Senate, they claim they want to change it to make it more representative of the people. See, they look at Montana with about 1 million people in it, and they say, why, well, it's unfair that Montana, with 1 million people in that state, have two United States senators, whereas California, with 40 million people in it, only has two United States senators. That is undemocratic. They've bastardized that word beyond all possible recognition, because they will bastardize anything beyond all possible recognition to win, to get their way. There's a reason that California and Montana and Rhode Island and Georgia and Michigan and New York all have the same number of senators. Originally, the Senate was to represent the state governments in Washington, D.C. It was a brilliant system that our founding fathers set up. Again, not because they wanted to promote the general welfare, which was carte blanche to do anything these liberals want. It's because the Senate was to protect the rights of the states. The Senate was to represent the states. Senators were not directly elected by the people of those states. They were elected by the legislatures. They were appointed by the legislatures of those states. The people populated the House of Representatives with their representatives every 2 years. It was the one closest to the people, the one most easily changed. The Senate was there to represent the state governments, to make sure that states' rights weren't overrun by the federal government. And when the people and the states agreed that federal action was required within the bounds of the Constitution, then they were free to act. Well, in the early days of the progressive movement at the beginning of the 20th century, this idea of our government sucking and hating our country really began to take hold. These elites wanted, of course, more control. They wanted to overthrow, change dramatically our type of government. They didn't like it. It wasn't able to do enough. With all those senators there protecting the states' rights from the progressive agenda, which sought to impose the progressive agenda on the entire country, kind of like they're doing now. It's not enough. They can ruin New York. They can ruin California. They can do pretty much what they want in those states. But the problem is, bordering and pretty close to those states are other states that won't follow suit, that won't commit economic suicide. So if they impose massive taxes, people will leave. If they impose massive regulations, companies will leave. People have places to go if these states get too far out of line. And we're seeing exoduses from New York down to Florida and from California to Texas. Unfortunately, the people who flee the governments they created are bringing their same stupid mindset with them and voting for Democrats when they get there. That's what makes these states possibly teetering blue. It's incredibly dangerous, but they don't have to worry about their home states turning red because they're being replaced by illegal aliens. It's a nice little convenience for Democrats and part of why they support open borders. Under our Constitution, California should be able to do whatever the hell they want. If they want to impose a single-payer health care system for everybody, tax everybody to death to pay for it, go ahead, knock yourselves out. But people can go to Arizona. People can move to Arizona and get the hell out of there and avoid that. They can't afford to lose people if they want to implement their fever dreams. So they want to use the power of Washington, D.C. to make sure there is no safe quarter. They want to impose what they would love to have in their state on the whole country so no one has any place to flee. Then they get their power. It's a sickness. So in the 1913, they changed the Constitution with the 17th Amendment that made for the direct election of senators. Didn't mess with the number of senators. It was still two per state, but now they were subject to the whims of the people. They became essentially members of the House of Representatives, who are elected statewide in every 6 years rather than in small districts every 2 years. Things then began to change. Now they want to make Senate representation proportional based on population, which is exactly what the House of Representatives is. That's where you get the Ezra Kleins of the world and the other alleged thought leaders on the left saying it's undemocratic. Why should this state have two when this more populous state only has two? Well, there's a very specific reason that it existed in the first place, and liberal progressives have been setting about to screw that up and miseducate people ever since, because that was a hindrance to their power grab. If they were to get what they want, and this will be a much longer process, they never stop. They're like the Terminator. They can't be reasoned with, and nothing will stand in the way of their goal. They're going to kill Sarah Connor no matter what. They would have California, I don't know, probably have what? 40 senators? Could you imagine the hell that would be? Whereas smaller states or more rural states would then only have two senators. It again gets back to the Electoral College. They hate the fact that rural Americans have a say in their country's government, and they want to find a way to override it, destroy it, turn it on its head, make everybody who is not living in a major city along the coasts subservient to those cities and subservient to the will of those people. Their instincts are horribly tyrannical and incredibly dangerous, and not exaggerating. We need to be vigilant. This is why everybody who isn't a liberal Democrat has to vote. I would never encourage a liberal to go vote. I don't care if they don't vote ever. I don't want them to vote. But people who love individual liberty and the concept of liberty and this country, the way it was founded, and the freedoms that we have guaranteed ourselves through limited government, need to go and vote against these people because they are fighting to take all of that from us. And that leads us to packing the Supreme Court. We've heard Cory Booker talk about it's the new cause. It's right there with the Electoral College. They want to pack the Supreme Court. They want to do it out of revenge for Donald Trump. They want to do it out of revenge for Merrick Garland. They want to do it mostly because they hate that they don't yet control you. So take the Supreme Court up to 15. They've thrown out cockamamie ideas. Just the other day we had Butthead Beto. He really does sound like Butthead. He's really the illegitimate child of Butthead and Napoleon Dynamite, talking about maybe Republicans have that was more Beavis. Maybe Republicans appoint 5 members of the Supreme Court, maybe Democrats 5 members of the Supreme Court, and then they get together and they come up with 5 of their own, and we just go from there. Cory Booker's talking about term limits. Not an age limit, but term limits. They all want to say we need to have some turnover in the Supreme Court, but none of them will call for Darth Vader Ginsburg to retire. She's half dead. Yet, there were a whole bunch of cultists out in front of the Supreme Court this week celebrating her 84th birthday or whatever the hell it is. It's bizarre. They contradict themselves regularly. I don't know how they live with themselves. But they want to pack the court systems. Why? Because even if they were to get rid of the Electoral College or regain control of the federal government, there's still their ultimate impediment in front of them, and that is the Constitution and the limits placed on the federal government by our Constitution. They hate that. They know that conservative justices are much more likely to tell them no, that they cannot institute their power grabs. They cannot take over industry. They cannot grab and seize the means of production because it is against the Constitution. It is unconstitutional. It is not a constitutionally prescribed and enumerated power. And they hate that. They know that a liberal justice will say, well, yeah, of course, you can do whatever you want. Constitution be damned. This is promote the general welfare stuff. And as I said, they snuck that little sentence into the preamble to say that the rest of this stuff is just going to be BS. It's all for show. That is why they are a threat to liberty, and that is why they must be defeated. And that is why they're all calling for massive changes to our system of government. It's much easier to change the rules to win than try to appeal to people that you despise. And make no mistake about it, every red state, every red county, every red person out there is despised by the left, and they will do anything to overrule your will, to silence you, to, dare I say, disenfranchise you in the name, of course, of progress and democracy and enfranchising others. They're a bunch of raging hypocrites, dangerous threat to this country, our way of life, and they need to be defeated roundly every single damn time they rear their ugly ass heads. Holy Frank Tanana, I just looked at the time. That was a long rant. I apologize. This didn't mean to be a lecture today. It was just those three things were in the news. There's still more to come, so don't worry. We're going to change topics, though, because I want to talk about Beto and Yang. Sounds like a really bad 1970s cop show. Beto and Yang. Sergeant wants to see you, Beto and Yang. Well, let's start with Beto, shall we? Because this is both funny and horrifying. Beto O'Rourke, in a recent profile on the Washington Post, it's a very long profile on Beto. They still don't mention his sort of crony capitalism and his work to gentrify a Latino neighborhood for his father-in-law while he was on the El Paso City Council, but that's neither here nor there. When your billionaire father-in-law tells you to jump, you say how high. Well, in the profile in the Washington Post, it turns out this is both horrifying and endearing, to be perfectly honest with you, because my parents pulled pranks on each other all the time. And it turns out that Beto takes that to a weird, sick kind of place. He really is butthead. He's such a child. He's in his 40s, and he acts like he's in his teens still. And you hear that in the fact that he never takes a policy position. His website still only sells stuff and asks for donations. There's nothing on there about what he wants to do were he elected president. But in this profile, it was revealed that he pulled a couple of pranks on his wife that were most people probably wouldn't like. When I say my parents pulled pranks, they pulled pranks on each other right after they first got married. I was always told these stories, and they would laugh hysterically as they told these stories. Like, my dad would put Vaseline on the toilet seat. So when my mom would go in there and sit down and, you know, whoosh, you'd slide right off. You're expecting some friction on that surface so as to not have you slide off onto the floor. They thought that was funny. They'd always throw cold water over the shower curtain when the other one was in the shower. They did all kinds of stuff like that. My mother put saran wrap over the toilet bowl itself. There's a lot of toilet things. But these were just the kind of pranks that they kind of did. They were playful. They were funny. If I threw cold water over the shower when my wife was in there, she would kill me. She takes like a 40-minute shower. The room is like a sauna. The walls are crying. It's ridiculous. But this is what people do and people did. Well, Robert Francis O'Rourke, likes to rip open the shower curtain with a big knife, psycho style, and try and scare the hell out of his wife. That is, like I said, it's kind of endearing, but it's also taking it to a place that's a little bit dark, a little bit creepy. In one particular instance, though, this is where it gets gross. This is where it gets creepy, and they don't say whether or not she ate it, but that makes me think that she did it. Let's see. In this profile, it says, he proposed on April Fool's Day, 4 months after they'd first met. Yeah, I'd try and lock down a billionaire's daughter pretty quickly, too. It seemed appropriate. That's how Amy knew him, and even now, impulsive and puckish. He told her on one of their first dates that he planned to name his first son Ulysses, which they did, about a year after marrying, following by Molly and a Henry. He dubbed their dog Roosevelt before realizing that the dog was a girl, who now goes by Rosie. How dumb do you have? You couldn't tell, Beto? And then there's the pranks, the remote-controlled cockroach in the kitchen, the psycho-style scares in the shower. And one time, according to a friend, Beto collected an especially verdant turd from one of their kids' diapers, put it in a bowl, telling Amy it was avocado. Neither would confirm this, though Beto did allow it sounded like something he'd do. Can you imagine going up to your wife or your husband with a bowl of baby poop, which can be quite avocado-esque. I've experienced it just today. And with, I assume, some nachos or something. How far do you let that go? Well, if you're inclined to do that in the first place, I got to assume you're at least to the point that the chip is dipped. You're possibly to the point that the chip, after dipping, is on its way to the mouth. And if you're the type of bonehead like Beto is, who does and says the things that he does, if you're that type of spaz, I suspect you try and hold that as laughter as long as you possibly can, and you might have just made it post-crunch. This would be grounds for divorce anywhere in the country, I would think, but these people seem to deserve one another, don't they? So yes, we've got one of the Democratic front runners is essentially a prepubescent boy, and the media finds it endearing. I find it up to a point endearing, but then he crosses that line. And there, now another candidate that you likely haven't heard of, maybe you have, Andrew Yang. He is not elected to anything, but he's running as a Democrat. He's an entrepreneur, which is a vague way of saying likely he comes from money and just messed around his whole life. He got some award from the Obama administration because he was a liberal in good standing. In 2012, he was declared a champion of change. And 2015, he was named Presidential Ambassador for Global Entrepreneurship, which is just a way to reward donors. Well, The Week did a profile on him. This guy is anti-circumcision, which I'm not really sure is an issue that's burning up the country. But hey, if that's what floats your boat, go ahead. But he's most noted for wanting to institute a basic income, a national basic income, $1,000 a month to every American that we can live on and we can supplement our incomes with, $1,000 a month per head. That won't get expensive at all. But this is the kind of idea you got. It's kind of funny because you got Beto, whose website has absolutely nothing on it as far as issues. He doesn't know what the hell he believes. In 2012, he campaigned saying that there's a lot of government waste and spending needs to be cut. Now he's all for whatever you got. He'll piss away money on that. Whereas Andrew Yang's website is full of pretty much everything. And this kind of lets you know the minutiae that these leftists want to get to. I want to highlight one area that was highlighted in the story on The Week. And it's, this should scare the hell out of everybody. It is on his website. Again, there are just tons of policy proposals. One is the American Mall Act. and it has its own page. It explains that malls are going bankrupt across the country, and there are a bunch of empty, vacant malls across the country. And he says 300 malls will close in the next 4 years, and hundreds more will struggle. So I don't know that where he gets that number. I love it when people say, in the future, these things will happen, because they don't have a freaking clue. Well, he says, as president, I will, quote, sponsor the American Mall Act, securing a $6 billion fund to help struggling malls attract businesses, schools, organizations, and entrepreneurs to find new uses for the buildings and commercial spaces. Is this really what the government needs to do? Is this really where we are? And yes, in fact, the reason I highlight the Mall Act, the American Mall Act, is because this is the level of minutiae, of control, of influence, of the tentacles of the federal government Democrats actually support. This is what they want. They want the government down to the level that they are dealing with malls, vacant malls. Here's an idea. Tear them down. If they're not, nobody ever wants to think for a second that maybe, just maybe, for a while there, we had too many malls. Maybe they were building too many malls, and the market said, you know what, we probably only need about half of these malls. So let's close the other ones. But no, it is, we must have something. Government must be involved. On him looking at his website, he also wants to subsidize local journalism, which of course is again government propaganda. Government, I mean, I guess it's not all that different than what we have now. He's got links on here: limit bureaucracy in the federal workforce, local journalism fund, American Exchange program, provide basic banking services through the post office. When's the last time you were in a post office and you thought, you know what, this management style of having four windows and only ever having one person working up there, that's what we need to bring to the banking industry. It's that level of insanity and government takeover that they want to bring. He's even got a tab in here for nuclear launch decisions. So if you want to know the circumstances under which Andrew Yang would launch a nuclear attack, he's got a paper for it. This is somebody who has too much money on their hands, too much time on their hands, and soon the rest of the Democratic field will be following this insanity. Free financial counseling for all. Yes, let's all take financial advice from the entity with more debt than pretty much every other country on the planet combined. $22 trillion in debt. What are you going to tell me? I guess the federal advice on money management would be, you see what we do? Yeah, don't do that. You'll end up broke and in prison. Don't do what we do. Do the opposite of what we do. So in that sense, I guess maybe I just solved the problem myself. Maybe we don't need a government. Oh, God. Making taxes fun. I'm afraid to click on that. In fact, I'm not going to click on that. But yes, if you've got the entire rainbow of lunacy on the Democratic side. And maybe in coming days, we'll explore Andrew Yang and some of his more ridiculous ideas going forward a little bit deeper. It could be fun, like the Andrew Yang policy position of the day. We can't do Beto O'Rourke because he has none. But Andrew Yang's got enough for 15 different candidates. God help us if any of these people get elected. But now you see why they want to destroy our institutions. A Senate where every state is represented equally would never pass any of this crap. A country with an electoral college where each state gets to decide, gets a say in who gets elected president, would never elect a lunatic like this president. And a court that was sane and revered the Constitution and took its duty seriously would never say, yeah, go ahead, turn the post office into the banking system. Go ahead, get into the banking system. Go for it. Knock yourself out. That's why they want to destroy all of this, because they have plans for you. Whether you have plans for them or not is irrelevant. They have plans for you, and that is exactly how the progressive mindset works. Speaking of that, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. She's desperate to get some traction. She's running for president, and nobody gives a damn. You see all these videos. There's a video of her yesterday whining about something, standing on a chair in a diner in Iowa or New Hampshire or whatever. Nobody around her. It was really kind of sad. Well, she is now coming out against opioid addiction. She's got a plan to cure the opioid problem. What is her plan? Well, she summarized it in a tweet, and she's also got Spartacus along for the ride, Cory Booker. She says, quote, "If we want to end the opioid epidemic, we must work to address the root causes of abuse. That's why Senator Cory Gardner, I'm sorry, not Booker, Gardner, Cory Gardner and I introduced legislation to limit opioid prescriptions for acute pain to 7 days, because no one needs a month's supply for a wisdom tooth extraction." Cory Gardner is a squishy Republican from Colorado, and Kirsten Gillibrand is a lunatic Democrat from New York. They, in many ways, deserve each other. But I do love this idea that the party of every choice is about a woman, especially when it comes, well, every choice of abortion is up to the woman 100%, up until even after birth. That choice is between a woman and her doctor, whether or not she wants to kill her newborn child, and the government has no role in that. The government has a health care decision. The government has no role in abortion. But if you were to, I don't know, break your back, break your leg, suffer serious chronic injury, whatever, the government should be right there in the operating room with you. They should be in the recovery room. And, you know, you get 7 days worth of pain pills, but you're just going to have to get your ass up to the Rite Aid or the CVS on that eighth day and go get a refill of that prescription. Your doctor cannot prescribe you more. Now, this is the federal government explicitly getting involved in the doctor-patient relationship. It doesn't involve a third human being like a baby. Then the government's in there. If it involves a baby, then go ahead, kill the baby, and then come back and we'll get involved when there's only two people. Doctors, of course, a whole bunch of people have reacted with absurdity, but this is the real cause. If she cares so much about the opioid epidemic, there's a really good way to put a dent in some of it. Yes, prescription drug abuse is a significant problem, but then so is the heroin coming across the southern border. And if only there were some kind of way to put up, I don't know, maybe there's a word for it, it's escaping me, but some sort of physical thing there that is an impediment, I guess maybe is the word I'm looking for, that makes it more difficult for people to mule drugs up from South and Central America, drugs like cocaine and heroin and fentanyl. If there was only some kind of, I don't know, I'm envisioning something that's tall and straight up and down, perpendicular to the ground. It could, I guess it could be slanted a little bit, but something there. I can't think of the word. A wall. That, yes, wall. If only there were a wall on the southern border, which, of course, Kirsten Gillibrand opposes. She'd much rather insert herself into the doctor-patient relationship than in the drug dealer-drug user relationship. She's more likely to get more votes from the drug dealer-drug user relationship, to be perfectly honest with you. So it's a safer bet for her. It's just kind of funny that certain times the doctor-patient relationship is absolutely sacrosanct, and the idea of the government daring to stick its nose into that situation is why it's beyond the pale. You're a monster for even suggesting it. But when it comes to dealing with acute pain, well, you are right there. Your senator should be sitting with you. Your governmental representative. Maybe you'll have to justify to the government why you need such a prescription in the first place. These people have absolutely no principles. They are, especially someone like Kirsten Gillibrand, has flip-flopped on everything, and she is just desperate for attention, trying to find something to catch fire. And turns out the only thing really catching fire is her chances. They're burning up. I want to address an email I got just really quickly. It said, is her name? It's Sachin. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name. My wife and I are big fans of the podcast. We listen every day. Got an unbiased picture of what's happening around the world instead of relying on left-wing tabloids. I give you, I'm biased. I'm a conservative. Don't ever think that I'm not. You mentioned that you worked in healthcare. Would you be willing to talk about how the free market should deal with pre-existing conditions? It seems like a hard problem to solve because of the costs involved. In any debate, our liberal friend, we have liberal friends, we don't have any answers to this question. Well, first off, there is no silver bullet to any problem in healthcare. It's such a massive leviathan of regulations, governments at every level, and doctors and ethics and everything. There is no simple solution to it. The most simple solution that you can get to when it comes to pre-existing conditions is high-risk pools and allow people to pool across the country, not just in one state. That gives you a much bigger pool. It gives you much stronger buying power. Also, price transparency would be incredibly helpful. When it comes to getting medical services, you have no idea what things cost. Most people have some form of plan. A lot of people do. Medicare in particular have first dollar coverage right from the first dollar. So they don't care what something costs. Somebody else is paying the bill. Who cares? When it comes to people with pre-existing conditions, if they're able to pool together and negotiate in a network across the country for lower prices, through the free market process, not by government mandates or dictates, and have price transparency, and have HSAs, tax-free dollars, that they are able to save and roll over with interest year to year, and then when they turn 65, they can withdraw that when they get into Medicare, and then they get that money tax-free. You find out what procedures cost. You find out, you shop around for prices for doctors, for procedures, for treatments, for prescriptions, what have you. Gives you more buying power. That would be the best way to do it. It's also what we don't ever do in this country. What we really haven't done in this country since World War II is introduce actual free market forces. Government dictating prices is definitely not the free market. Companies is doing the same, is much closer because you can switch companies, your employer can switch companies, and you know, you can doctors and hospitals and networks of physicians can decide whether or not they want to deal with a particular company. That's much closer to a free market, but you still have no idea what a procedure costs. And most likely, if you have insurance, you don't care what a procedure costs. You go to your doctor, they say you need this x-ray, and the next thing you know, you're standing in front of the machine covered in lead, and they've run out of the room, and you're hearing this button. Well, what if you knew what an x-ray cost? What if you had to pay for some of that? Or what if you cared? What if you kept your health care bills below a certain percentage? You got a rebate back from the company. You might go, how much is an x-ray? It's $200, and you get on the phone, you call a couple other places, and you'll find somebody who'd do it for $50. Then you'd go over to the place that would do it for $50, or maybe you're more comfortable with somebody who does it for $100. You don't want to go to the Kmart of x-rays. Whatever the case, we need to inject some personal responsibility back into healthcare, and we need to bring out some price transparency. And that means that people would become price sensitive. You incentivize them through HSAs and being able to keep that money and get it when they're 65. Pay for health care out of tax-free money. But as far as pre-existing conditions, the simplest way to address it is to have high-risk pool nationwide, have several high-risk pools so that they can compete with each other for the business of the people with pre-existing conditions. Or just pay more. Recognize that if you had four cars and you've wrapped each one of them around a tree because you're a terrible driver, that you are just going to have to pay more for your car insurance. Yes, health insurance and car insurance are slightly different, but only slightly. The problem is insurance for a car is thought of as actually what insurance is. Insurance for health insurance is not thought of what insurance is. It's supposed to really, it should be, you know, high deductible, catastrophic. It should be what most people have. That's the bare minimum or whatever. That should be the goal for everybody, is to get them into that. In case something goes horribly wrong, you insure against it. In your house, you insure against a fire. You don't insure against, you don't feel like paying your mortgage that month. So, yeah, re-educating people about what insurance is supposed to be, understanding that some people are higher risk and they're going to have to pay a little more, and then allowing for them to pool together in as large a pool as humanly possible and negotiate for the best prices possible would be the best thing we could do, not the government coming in and mandating that everybody have to pay more for the, what, small percentage of people with pre-existing conditions who would have to pay more. Some personal responsibility and some understanding of what insurance is would be a good, good starting point. All right, I want to talk, I hope I answered your question. I just didn't want to type all that out, and there's more, but I just can't go into it, or this whole show would be about healthcare. The list of performers have been released. Maybe I'm putting on my old fuddy-duddy pants, and I'm pulling them up to my neck, the grandpa pants, and I'm going to start yelling, "Get off my lawn." The 50th anniversary of Woodstock is coming up, and somebody saw an opportunity to make a buck off of suckers. They made a bunch of money off the 25th anniversary and the 30th anniversary. But at the 25th anniversary, I think, was the one that went off. It was the one that went off well and smooth, and everybody had fun. And the 30th anniversary one was the one where everybody was a complete jerk and women were being sexually assaulted. Well, now the 50th anniversary is rolling around, just to make you feel old if you happen to be alive for the first one. I was not. And they announced the lineup of bands. I'm just going to read some of them. It's 3 days of peace and profit, or love, and whatever. It is August 16th, 17th, and 18th. So if you have a huge pile of money you want to set on fire, hate yourself, and have awful taste in music, this is the musical festival for you. I'd say about 3% of these bands are somebody that I would pay $5 to see. Day one is The Killers, Miley Cyrus, Santana. Why Santana? Get over it. The Lumineers, The Raconteurs, Robert Plant, and the Sensational Space Shifters. Somebody thought of that name while they were high. John Fogerty, Run the Jewels, The Head and the Heart. We have to agree as a society we've run out of good band names. And then, like, I don't know, Dorothy, Flora Cash, Larkin Poe. People naming their kids Larkin Poe these days. The next day is Dead and Company, which is, I assume, all the members of the Grateful Dead who aren't yet grateful enough to be dead. So they're going to just dick around on their guitars for about 45 minutes. Chance the Rapper, the Black Keys, Sturgill Simpson, Greta Van Fleet, Portugal. They're bringing the whole country of Portugal. These names. And then there's, this is just sad, David Crosby and Friends. Given all the bands, like the hip-hop and the pretentious hipster rock that they're going for, you imagine being David Crosby's walrus-looking fat ass waddling out on stage, plucking his acoustic guitar, probably high off his gourd. And nobody in the crowd cares that you're there. Like, just get off the stage, Grandpa. And then they've got Jay-Z, Imagine. This is the last day. Jay-Z, Imagine Dragons, Halsey, Cage the Elephant, Brandi Carlile, Janelle Monáe, Young the Giants. Let's have a meeting about your names here, people. Cherry Glazer, Marcus the King Band, or the Marcus King Band. Victory Hall. You couldn't pay me to go to this thing. I don't like music all that much, although I know an awful lot about music and bands and music history. I grew up loving the 50s and 60s. Buddy Holly, the first real singer-songwriter, an anomaly back in the 50s. And Chuck Berry, the same thing, another anomaly. Chuck Berry went to jail and Buddy Holly died in a plane crash. And then music sucked until the Beatles came along. But I skipped the 70s. I more liked the alternative new wave 80s stuff and the alternative rock in the 90s. And this stuff just sounds like I'd much rather practice self-dentistry than sit through 3 days of this crap and a $40 hot dog. I'm going to pass. There, I'm going to take off my grandpa pants and go to bed. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Please keep on trucking and don't go to Woodstock, for God's sakes. We'll see you tomorrow.
Well, my view is that every vote matters.